Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and a broker at StoneX and Daniels Trading, where we do anything from swaps and OTC and structured products to the futures and option markets, and also cash and cash consulting on the grain and agriculture products too. If you are a client here and only in one of those and interested in other products, or you'd like something that we're talking about and want to add to or get involved, give me a call at the office. My number is 312-706-7610. If you're not a client and would like to know more about how we can work with us, you can give me a call too. And all my contact information is in the show notes and on the website. Speaking of the website, if you want to check out Turner's Take newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com. That'll redirect you to StoneX and Daniels Trading. It's all that information. And if you like the podcast, you can go ahead, please, to iTunes and give us a favorable review. That's how people find us, and you can send it off to other people too. This is a free podcast. So that is the intro. Let's get into it. Like most Turner's Take podcasts, I like to start off with the macro picture. What's going on overall? The big news this week, I think, was the Fed. There was some anticipation towards this. I don't think it had to do with interest rates. That had to do with other things. No one was really expecting interest rate increases. They're going to keep things low. We're still coming out of this recovery. The government's doing stimulus. The Fed's not going to get in the way of that. They're going to keep interest rates low. It is interesting to see the 10-year and some of the the treasuries and interest rates starting to creep higher, and that's definitely happened. So the Fed may be forced to do something in the future, but for right now, the market's going to take care of that if they think rates need to come up. What I found the most important, and what I was really looking for on the Fed meeting, they met yesterday and the day before, and they had the announcement and the meeting summary afterwards around 1 o'clock Central. They usually do that. Was it had to do with inflation, GDP, and unemployment, which are the other things the Fed pays attention to. So at the last December meeting, GDP was at about 4.2%. We are now going to 6.5% on the GDP. So that is some growth. That's very good to see. The unemployment rate, which was estimated that might be 5% in 2021, they're talking about 4.5% now. So that's come down to the 0.5%. The central bank did increase inflation, though, or the expectations for inflation. They thought it'd be 1.8%. Now it's going to be higher at 2.4%. So the Fed didn't change rates. They do see inflation coming, some of it, not crazy inflation, but definitely going back up into the twos. They think unemployment will continue to fall, which is great. I want to say around 4.5% or in there, that range before COVID. So that'd be nice to see to get back there. And a GDP, the U.S. economy on average grows 2 to 3% a year. And any mature free market, somewhat free market country is with an economy, a developed economy, will grow 2 to 3%. And that's not just the United States, but Germany and Japan. And there's some other, the big mature developed economic powers, usually that have a free market or capitalist economy, will grow 2 to 3%, as they mature. So they were thinking we're gonna see 4.2% for this year, for 2021. And a lot of that extra growth over the 3% has to do with how bad things were during the COVID year, right? And all the catch up and the growth you get. Now they're looking at 6.5% in 2021, which is China numbers, right? I mean, 6-7% is definitely a China growth number. So I think with the economy opening back up, with what the Fed is seeing, with the coronavirus vaccines, we'll see a you know, basically a nice shot in the arm here with the U.S. economy. That should be bullish overall for commodities. The stock market should be good for the dollar. We will see inflation. It just depends how much on the inflation side. I don't think we'll go hyperinflation. I know there's some stories out there, and especially the metals people and the Bitcoin, and a lot, you know, there's an expectation of a lot of inflation. It could be, but there's definitely going to be some. That's something that I'd be, you know, we'll see more of that. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually the inflation rate actually gets to 3% from the Fed at their next meeting or sometime this year. So in the meantime, good for commodities. And that's the general macro overview that we're going to go off of here for the next, for at least the next quarter and probably for the year. And that's what will basically be the guide, the overarching theme. Now we're going to move on to energy, livestock, and the grain markets, the commodity section of this podcast. We'll do energy first. You know, the energy market had been rallying hard. We had seen OPEC not wanting to increase supply. Demand was getting better, plus the expectation of demand getting better this summer. So the term structure is really starting. They were bullish to begin with, but get more bullish. We saw crude go above 60. And right now, I'm going to take a quick look at where. Now, crude oil has backed off in the past couple of days. You can make the case that we ran too far too fast, which is the nature of these markets sometimes. But if you look since, let's say, the election, we started to climb higher in crude. On the trend line, I'm looking at July crude right now, and about 60, 50, 60 and a half. We're still in an upward trend. If we do close another dollar or two higher, and I'm thinking 58, that 58 level, if we close below there, we're going to break through this this trend. And that will be a pretty good bearish signal, not just a correction, but maybe we do come back down to the mid or low 50s. I don't think that's going to happen. We are seeing refineries come in and start processing more. There is an expectation, you know, from on the business side and the commercial side, that we're going to see more demand here. We ran up in July to 66, you know, at the right around the election, November 3rd, July crude was $38. All right, $38. So July crude ran from basically the election until last week, almost $30. It almost doubled. All right. So there are going to be healthy corrections here. Now, you can make the case crude oil should be in the 50s and 60s. And I agree with you. I mean, looking back, maybe, you know, crude oil back in September, October, November, when, you know, there was a lot of liquidation caused from concern about the second season of COVID. What are the vaccines going to work? Was it going to be new strains? What did that mean for the economy for the next couple of months? And there you go. You had prices in the low 40s and high 30s with crude. Since the election, a couple of things have happened. The vaccines that we were told were coming came. There's more of them. There's higher production. You're actually going to see. I mean, I think by the summer here, anyone who wants a vaccine could probably be able to get it. I haven't gotten one yet. I'm not on the priority list. I'm 44 years old and, you know, and relatively healthy. Probably stand to lose a couple of pounds, but otherwise they're not going to give me a shot. But, you know, even someone like me probably get one in May or June. So I think the market. And I'm last in line. So, you know, then that means everyone, you know, will be able to get it. So, and I think the market knows that. And then with OPEC deciding not seeing the market getting tighter on supply side and basically deciding they didn't want to increase supply, which I get, you know, if you think about it from their viewpoint, not our viewpoint, right? From their viewpoint, they want higher prices. They got to pay for their social programs and the government and everything else. And it makes a lot of things work in OPEC land and Russia, higher oil. So they've been having low prices now for over a year, at least. And they've had strain on their economy too. So I don't think they're rushing out to help the world out with lower energy prices right now. You know, if crude's in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I think they're fine with that. So anyways, I think the market knew that too. The current administration is going to, you know, I don't want to get political here, but they're just going to, it's a fact. They're going to be more about green energy, not so much about fossil fuel. That's fine. I'm sure it makes up for itself in the years ahead. In the short term, though, it does put a little bit of a tight spin. a tight crunch on energy, right? And that's why we've gone up also. And this economic growth that we've all been expecting and the Fed is confirming with GDP going up, interest rates coming down, and plus the inflation factor, are all been bullish factors in energy. I think crude deserves to be in the 50s and 60s. I can see the economy really coming back. People are going out. What happens if in May, June, and July, everyone has the vaccine? It's no more mandates. Maybe crude goes to 70 at that point. Maybe it just stays in the 50s and 60s because when it does get that high, you see more production, right? You see shale, U.S. exploration, or maybe OPEC does decide, to pump more. And those things can happen, but I think that's where we are. So I like crude in the 50s. I think we're around 60 now. I think 58 is a very interesting price level. If anyone wants to try to jump into crude, I like buying call spreads and selling put spreads. Futures are hard to handle in a market like this, and especially when you got upside, especially when we're talking about a $10, $15 potential range. For crude oil this summer, there's enough upside and potential to use that kind of trading strategy. And because there is that kind of range potential, you sometimes don't want to be in the futures market because it just can move too fast. I mean, not everyone wants to deal with a $3.50 down day, which we're getting right now, right? If you do, go for it. But if not, there's other options. And if you want to talk about that, how to do it, whether it be for future spreads or option spreads, let me know. Whether you're a client or you're looking to work with us, happy to talk to you through about how that goes. And not just on the spec side, this would be good for hedgers who need, who probably need to still hedge fuel costs. I mean, it's not $30 and $40 like we were back earlier this year, but if we do dip into the 50s and potentially go to the 70s, there's still risk out there, for the end user. So that's where we are on the energy market. I want to talk about cattle a little bit. It's very interesting recently what's going on with the hog market. There is a real concern about one supply. A lot of the processors had to shut down during COVID, and so that limited the supply. There is a concern about how much feed we'll have and how much it will cost. If we remember back in 2012, we actually had a feed shortage, and a lot of animals were culled, and that's what led to very high livestock prices and 13 and 14. It took a couple of years just to get, because basically they weren't just going ahead and slaughtering everything, but maybe they weren't breeding for replacement as much because of the high cost and the limited availability of feed. So that has been a theme recently of the hog market. The cutouts are going higher, and plus seasonally, we start to see more demand for pork and pork products in the spring and summer months. Think barbecue. I got a new smoker for Christmas. I'm going to be doing a pork butt. That's what my wife gave me this year. So that's going to be awesome, right? And those kinds of things, right? So we're seeing that in the livestock market. Cattle too. We've had a run up here in cattle. And when prices for grain started to go up, and there was a concern about availability for feed. Usually what happens is more animals get slaughtered, the front end of the price curve gets pressure, and then the back end goes up. We've seen that. We may have hit a resistance point here. I think I was looking at May feeders the other day. We kind of went into the 150s and then broke down. Looks like the cattle charts are getting a little weaker too. But the long-term idea is that we go higher. And in any market, it's never a straight line up. The hotter the market gets, the bigger the corrections are. It's the way it is. Anyone who's been through currency, stocks, commodities, whatever it may be, has seen that before. Bitcoin, right? That's another one that gets hot with huge corrections too. And I think that's what we're seeing there in the livestock market. Now, we're about 13, 14 minutes into the podcast. Going to spend the last 5 minutes or so on the grain markets. March. I say this every year. I said it this year too. I put it out in some pretty big newsletters and podcasts last month. This time period is usually a consolidation, range-bound, choppy time period. And the reason is when you get to late winter, let's call it past the Ag Forum, into this February, mid to late February, the crop in South America is pretty much made, or you have a pretty good idea of what it's going to be. exports start to switch for booking from the United States down to South America. It's too early to have any kind of U.S. weather rally in corn and soybeans. May get some from wheat on winter killer if it's dry, which is what we did see a little bit this year. But for the most part, March is a range-bound time where things don't pick up again in the grain markets until April or May. Now, you might be seeing some of these prices say things are moving to the downside. Well, yeah, they are moving to the downside right now, and I wouldn't be surprised to see November beans get close to $12. We're at about, you know, $12.10 today. You know, July's down 18. November's down 24. These things will happen. We are still in an uptrend. There's still a reason to believe that, you know, we're going to be tight in soybeans, you know, next year. But, you know, when we always say is when you have tight stocks, beans trade between 12 and 15 and a half. Corn will trade above four. And then when stocks are really tight, it can be in the fives. You know, and here wheat is in the sixes. So we are, and, you know, soybean oil today is down about 100 points. Palm oil really broke overnight. And the thing is, you know, and when you're looking at the screen and you see these green and red numbers, you're like, wow, these are huge moves. What I would say to you in a market like this, in any kind of very big bull market, take a look at a daily chart and just to kind of realize that, yeah, the moves are big. You're absolutely right. But when you look at it on a daily chart and you just kind of look at the pattern, the moves don't seem to be as big as they are. Now, I am concerned about new crop beans here holding this $12.10, $12 range. And also, you know, because it would be, there's definitely some pretty critical support lines there with November. I mean, with July soybeans, you know, I would think that's been holding up well too, but you want to see them hold these levels in the high 13s. You know, with corn, you want corn to stay in the, you know, in the 520s for July, and for May, you really want to see it, oh, not really break 530. And again, that's 20 cents away. But you know, I would think those levels hold, but it's something to keep an eye on. And it's not something to be surprised about in March. A lot of farmers, my phone's been pretty quiet after it ringing off the hook all of, you know, the end of last year and January into February. It's been pretty quiet the past couple of weeks. And I'm not surprised. This is not the time of year right now to get excited about the grain markets. Now, it is interesting that May is still holding up against July. I think it's up a cent while we're down 8, 9, 10 cents, telling you that we still have tightness in the grain markets. And even if it looks bearish right now on just the day-to-day because we're down a nickel or 10 cents, still at 550 in old crop, right? And we're still at 470 in new crop. So just keep that in mind. We still, you know, July's down 20, new crop's down 26 as I'm talking. These kind of corrections are going to happen. You don't want to be too heavy in the markets if you are trading futures. If you're not trading futures and you want to put something on, I still like buying call spreads and selling put spreads. I think that's a good way to handle these markets right now. And if you want some help with that or some exposure ahead of the report, let me know. Next week would be a great time to put some of those on. The big planting intentions report is on the end of the month. There's a lot of speculation. You're going to start here. I want to talk about the planting report. There's a lot of speculation on the planting report. I mean, I've been seeing 94, 95 million acres corn, 91, 92 million acres soybeans. Those are the real numbers. We're going to blow out the record, I think, on corn plus soybeans. And you got to ask yourself, if you're gaining all those acres, where are those acres going from? Like, I cannot remember a time where we saw more than 182 million acres for corn and beans. If we're adding to that, you know, it's not like we're adding corn and soybean acres. You know, these new acres are coming out of nowhere in Iowa and Illinois and Indiana or Ohio or southern Minnesota. That's not where these acres are coming from. Like, where are they coming from and how productive are they going to be? And are they, you know, and are they for real? Now, they could be just fine, you know, on the productivity, but it's not going to be, you know, an average. But I doubt it's going to be, you know, this new ground is going to be 225 corn or 80, you know, bushels, you know, 70 bushel soybeans. Like, you know, you know what I mean? And so that's something to keep in mind too. We are getting moisture back, and that is nice for the farmers. If you're a farmer who's had dry conditions and has benefited from the moisture, that's great. That's come through here. That'll help. And the market's selling off a little bit about that. but the and we'll also have quarterly stocks at the end of the month too. So prices are high. You know, there's probably some profit taking. I have seen low volume. I've seen some open interest come down as the funds have sold a little bit and takes them off the table. It makes sense. And then we'll see what happens here as, you know, we get more into the end of the year. The weather story is probably now done in South America. The demand story, well, you still got to keep an eye on second crop corn down there. And it will be interesting to see as these yields continue to come in. But also what we've seen is the shipping really escalate down in South America. And you can see those pictures. I've sent it out. And I'll probably, and it's on Twitter, one of the analysts at Reuters, you know, put it on there. And you can see all the ships leaving the ports and going, you know, all over the world with soybeans right now. So it's just not the time of year to be long. I don't think there's a ton of risk to the downside, but that is the name of the game right now with the grain markets. Going forward, if grains are going to rally, which they certainly can, it's going to have to be from most likely a U.S. weather issue coming around the bend, you know, in planting or in either planting or the growing season. Now, hold on one second. I want to talk real quick about the balance sheets, and I'm going to rack this. All right, I'm back. Yeah, I do get calls from time to time in the trade desk, even on solo periods like today. But, you know, I'm just one thing I want to wrap this up with, the balance sheets. We're taking a look at the balance sheets, and we do see the demand. I know that the market's fallen here, and people are saying, hey, listen, look at all this corn China's buying. They're probably going to have like 3 million metric tons on the next export report. I realize that. So when you look at the USDA numbers for corn, you got to think the exports are closer to, I don't know, you know, I'm thinking exports are another 200-300 million above where probably the USDA thinks they are. If that's the case, then I mean, most likely we're probably at an ending stock of 1.1, 1.2 billion. That's where I think we are, stock to usage of 7.5%. And to me, that means, you know, old crop really should be in the mid fives, right? And that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I think if that's the case, then we do have the potential for old crop to rally to six, if the acres, maybe the acres aren't there. Or we have weather issues or whatever it may be. So that for old crop, I get it. I understand it. You know, the USDA is saying 2.6 billion in the export. We could be 2.8 or 2.9. And I do think the ending stocks get closer to a billion rather than closer to 1.5 billion. And then old crop deserves to be, you know, in the fives. So that's one thing. When it relates to new crop, I mean, the acre thing is all over the place. You know, if you're one of these analysts that says 92 million acres of corn, some are saying 93, 94. But if you're one of these analysts saying 92 million corn, I understand where they're coming with it. You know, with a trend line yield, we're probably a billion over. I mean, this is a great way to think about it. At 92 million acres and about a trend line yield, what the USDA or whatever the ag forum was saying on the yield, we basically use as much as we produce. So if we end this year at 1.2 billion, which kind of makes sense to me, based on the Chinese purchases that the USDA is going to have to account for, then at 92 million acres planted and about a 179.5-180 yield, same, we're using the same. Like it's all a wash. The ending stocks this year will be the same as ending stocks next year. And corn should continue to be in the mid fours to mid fives, you know, maybe 450 to six again, you know, depending on the weather, the demand, can the world catch up on acres? Because, you know, if they do and they, you know, the world just blows out corn acres, then that's another story to go back down into the low fours and high threes. But if they don't, or there's weather issues, you know, we're staying at these prices. So I like to say sometimes new crop eventually becomes old crop. If we know we're going to be year over year on tightness, you know, sometimes we can, you know, look for those prices to stay the same. I do think with new crop, you know, $5 is really the target. Old crop would be, you know, we're at 550 now, so let's just call it like the high fives, you know, on a summer weather rally. It's difficult for new crop to get over $5, I think, on December, only because the rest of the world can grow a lot of corn, right? So, and there will be that discount, for the market, and whether they're growing a lot of corn in Ukraine, or if it's down in South America, or if it's South Africa, or it's other parts of the world, or other parts of Europe that can grow corn, or expansion of acres in the United States. What we did see from the 2012, era, the 11, 12, 13, is that, if prices stay high long enough, it certainly brings out a lot of acres around the world. So market knows that, and that's kind of where I think we're going to see things with corn. On the soybean question, no matter how you slice it, we're going to have 100, we're going to be in the low 100s for the carryout. And soybeans deserves to be in this 12 to 15 and a half range. Right now we're in the high 13s. I think when I started this podcast, we may have been in the low 14s. But, new crop soybeans really should be $12. There's no reason for it to go below 11 at these things. And, if new crop soybeans are 90 million acres and we have a trend line yield year over year, ending stocks don't change. So we're just tight again. Now, can we really blow out the acres? I guess, but it's going to have to be an expense of something. And could we just have a great growing season? I mean, we could have a perfect growing season, and the yield for corn is 184 and the yield for soybeans is 53 or something like that. I mean, those things can happen. But even with like a 53 yield on soybeans, let's say on 90 million acres, we're adding, let's do that math there. So for, let's say we harvest 90 million acres, for every increase bushel per yield, that's 90 million you're adding back to ending stock. So if we think we're going to be at 120, now all of a sudden we're at 210. If we're at a 51 yield, if we're at a 52 yield, we're 290. If we're at a 53 yield, we're like 360. I mean, 360 million. And now we're back up to 10% stock to usage. Still means soybeans at $10 at that point at a 53 yield. Doesn't mean soybeans at $14, right? So just to keep that in mind, in terms of acres and yield, it's always good to understand where the acres are and how much a yield, let's say yield up or down 5 or 10%. What does that mean for ending stocks historically? What does that mean for prices? And that's something we're going to be talking a lot more about going forward here. I think that helps out my clients and the subscribers and the farmers and end users that I work with really understand what the potential for prices are. And if you've ever seen me in a conference, I'd spend a good amount of time on that too, because at the end of the day, it's about ending stocks and how tight are we and where prices have been comparatively, historically, when we get that tight. And so that's going to wrap it up. Today's podcast is a little bit longer than I thought. Again, if you have any questions, you want to work with me, let me know. And now that I'm fully part of StoneX, it can be OTC, whether it's stuff like accumulators and things like that. We can do swaps. We can do different expirations and customize futures and option prices or option products through the OTC market. Can do anything you want in futures and options. And also now in the cash market and some of the specialty products we were able to help and offer some benefit to. So if you have an involvement in that, let me know. Again, thanks for listening. Everyone have a great week. We'll be the podcast next week will be focusing on basically the planting intentions report and the stocks report that comes on the end of the month. Again, my number here is 312-706-7610. 312-706-7610. I didn't get enough into wheat. I like wheat. We have had some moisture, but I do like wheat. I think we're setting up for a much more bullish wheat prospect, but old crop is still a little burdensome. We still got a little weather, seasonally a little bit of decline in the wheat process. But once the harvest comes go, the wheat market looks pretty interesting too. But it's just not the right time of year to be long wheat, or it's not a bad time of year to be long wheat. It's just more of a choppy time of year to be in the wheat market. So everyone, thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, please pass it on. Please give me a call if you want to talk, and have a good week.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.